Okay, brief recap from last week. We began exploring one particular topic within Nogea Be'edus, but in many ways this is the issue that becomes the vista into the sugya in terms of exploring the various conceptual approaches, and that is the question of Tchiloso Be'psol V'sofo Be'kashrus. We noted that according to the Gemara Bava Basra and Daf Kof Chav Ches, there's a general principle that in order to qualify for as a witness in a Jewish court, you not only need to be kosher le'edos at the point when you give the testimony, but also at the point when you saw the actual event on which you are testifying. And if you are not kosher at either point, you are disqualified from edos. And yet we saw that there seems to be a prominent exception in the Gemara Bava Basra Daf Mem Gimel regarding nogea be'edos. If I have some kind of financial investment in the case, right? I'm partners in the ownership of a field. Someone's claiming that my partner and I don't own the field. I have the right to relinquish my own monetary stake in the field. And once I do so, I'm allowed to testify. And the Rishonim were wondering, why in the world should that be okay if indeed we have this general principle that you need both tchiloso v'sofo b'kashrus, the beginning and the end, to be in a state of kashrus, in a state where one is proper and qualified to deliver that testimony. And yet here you have a case where clearly they're not qualified at the initial moment where the case comes up, right? That at that initial moment, I do have some kind of monetary investment in the case itself. I do gain or lose depending on the outcome of the case. And it's only later that I, to use the technical language, that I am mesalik. It's only later that I relinquish my monetary stake in the case. So the Rishonim wondered why it is that one has the ability to do that and then offer edus. So we saw a couple of different approaches. First, we saw the Rashba who quoted the Ravid. We saw two so far, two ideas quoted within the Rashba, and I noted that these really emerged from the Rishonim. The first is the Ravid's assertion that the whole psul of Nogea Be'edos is not really a formal disqualification. It's a chashashek. We're concerned that perhaps the person is not telling the truth. They're not formally disqualified in court. It's just that we don't know whether or not they're telling the truth, and once we are able to remove that consideration, that chashash, that concern that perhaps they aren't telling the truth, they should be fully kosher, because after all, in the first place, they never had any formal disqualification. And we noted that that makes a particular assertion about the nature of nogea be'edus. He's asserting that it is not a formal disqualification, but rather just a chashash shakar. And it also makes the additional assumption that tchiloso b'psol v'sofo b'kashrus only applies, that whole principle that you need both tchila and sof b'kashrus only applies to formal disqualifications and not to technical disqualifications like a chashash sheker. Now, we noted that everybody would agree that to some extent that would be the case, right? If he had laryngitis when he first saw it and wasn't able to deliver testimony for something technical like that, I don't think anybody would tell you that he's disqualified from testimony. But when it comes to something like a chashash sheker, where there's at least a concern that he's not reliable, one may have said that problem would still apply. That was the approach of the Ravid. The second approach that we saw, the Rashba quoted as a Lashon Acher, and we noted that this is the approach of the Rimikash, was that a Nogea Be'edos is not an aid puzzle. It's not that he is a disqualified witness, but rather he is not a witness at all. There are different distinct roles in any court case. There's the role of, particularly there are three primary roles. There's the role, we could possibly add more, but three primary roles: the role of the judge, the role of the witness, and the role of the litigants. And a person who is a litigant is not an aide. So we noted that at all. And we noted that this makes certain assumptions as well. A, you have the initial assertion that one who is a Baal Davar is not an aide puzzle, but is rather in this new category called not a witness at all. You're not a disqualified witness, it's that you're not within the category of witnesses entirely. That's an interesting chidush in and of itself. We noted that the Ravid, as quoted by the Rush in Maseches Makos, we noted that at the very end last time, also forwards this idea in other contexts that we will hopefully explore in more depth in future shiurim, perhaps next week. But that's assertion number one. Assertion number two, again, like the Ravid, he has to assume that tchiloso b'psol v'sofo b'kashrus is circumvented if the person is not an aid at all, which again is not an obvious assumption. We could have challenged that. We noted two different formulations, etc. And the third assertion of the Rimigash was that anybody who is nogeya b'davar is also a ba'al davar. And we finished last time noting that this is a very significant chidush of the Rimigash that's often overlooked. And there are other Rishonim who explicitly disagree with this. It's true. If Reuven and Shimon, the example that I gave was as follows, right? Reuven and Shimon have a court case, right? Then Reuven and Shimon are the litigants. They are the ba'alei davar. And therefore, they would not be considered edim psulim. They would be outside of the category of edus entirely. But what if Reuven and Shimon have their court case, and I went to Vegas and placed a bet that Reuven is going to win? So am I one of the litigants in the case? No. Am I one of the ba'alei davar in a strict sense? No. I might be nogeya b'davar insofar as I will benefit if Reuven wins the case, and I'll lose money if Shimon wins the case. So I'm nogeya. But I'm not directly one of the ba'alei davar. The Rimigash takes the leap of saying that anyone who is nogeya is a ba'al davar. And I noted that some Rishonim seem to reject this last step. So first, we noted two, one implicitly and another explicitly, and the one that's explicit I want to read inside tonight. The implicit one was the Ravid himself. I noted that the Ravid argues in other contexts that a Baal Davar is not an aid at all. He's not an aid puzzle, but rather he is totally disqualified from the category of aidus. So if you look in source 7, again, I noted that that's the Rush in Makos, who famously quotes the Ravid. The context is Nimtza Echad Mehem Karov Apostle, Eidosh Abat Lametzasa Bat Lekula. The Gemara in the first part of Makos, on Davav, says that we know that in general, Pishnayim Edim Yakum Davar, you need two Edim, two kosher witnesses, to prove something in court, particularly in the realm of Mammon and the realm of Nefashos, in really most areas, getting out of, you know, Eidach Nevisurim and Shavua and stuff like that. You need two witnesses. But what if you come in with additional witnesses? So the Gemara there says, if you come in with five witnesses and one of them is found to be puzzel, even though you still technically have two edim kshirim, you still have two kosher witnesses, indeed you have four, you throw out the entire group. And even if there are 100, afilu mea, if one of them is disqualified, you throw out the entire group. But the Ravid notes, and again, this is based on different principles, based on a Gemara Sanhedrin al-Daf Yud, where we say, Pagina dibura, there are certain cases where we don't throw everything out just because one person is not kosher. And the Ravid asks why. And his answer is, when somebody is a Baal Davar, and somebody is a Baal Davar, then they are not a disqualified witness, they are not Edim Psulim, but they are not Edim at all. And when somebody is not an Ed at all, Edo Shabbat Lametzah Shabbat Lekula does not apply. Now again, that's a significant assumption, and hopefully when we assess whether or not Edo Shabbat Lametzah Shabbat Lekula applies to Nogeya Be'edos, which is a question of the Mishnah Lamelach, we'll have to revisit that question. Is it really true that just because you are disqualified from the category of Eidos, that Eidos Shabbat L'Matzah Shabbat L'Kula is not going to apply? You could have claimed, no. Even if you're not an Eid Puzzle, even if you're disqualified from the category of Eidos entirely, Eidos Shabbat L'Matzah Shabbat L'Kula is still going to be a problem. But that's the Ravid's assertion. But significantly, when it comes to Nogeya Be'Eidos, when it came to our question of Tchilaso B'Psol V'Sofa B'Kashros, the Ravid did not give that answer. What did the Ravid say? The Ravid, quoted by the Rashba, said that Nogeya Be'edos is all about a Chashah Sheker. He did not say that you are a Ba'al Davar. So what's implicit in the Ravid is that, yes, it is true that a Ba'al Davar is in this separate category. He's not an Eid Puzzle. He is outside of the category of Edos entirely. But that doesn't mean that every Nogeya Be'edos is in that same category. He rejects the Rimigash's additional leap that every Nogeya Be'edos is a Ba'al Davar. And this is explicitly rejected by the Ritva in Source 8. So Ritva Maseches Kiddushin, the beginning of the second paragraph of Maseches Kiddushin, begins a little bit talking about the mitzvah of Kiddushin, but then for the first couple of dapim, it's all about shlichus. Right? That's the locus classicus of the sugyas of shlichus in Shas. It's obvious that Shas sugya shlichus, it comes up all over the place, but the central location for those sugyas is the beginning of the second paragraph of Kiddushin. And the Gemara poses a question as to whether or not shliach na'ase eid. We know that you need what's called edus l'kiyum hadavar on kiddushin. You need two witnesses to be present in order for the chalos kiddushin to take effect. In order for the legal status of marriage to take effect, you need two witnesses to be present. And the Gemara, and we'll have to talk about edus l'kiyum hadavar also. We're not going to talk about it tonight. Again, hopefully future shiurim we'll talk about that. But the question the Gemara poses is, let's say I make somebody a shliach, I make somebody my agent to marry a woman on my behalf, to be mekadesh Isha on my behalf. And then I say, you know what? I don't really have enough people. Can you also serve a dual function and also serve as the witnesses? So the Gemara considers the possibility that they are nogea be'edus, because if they failed to carry out their task, they're going to have to take a special shvua, a shvuas hasis, a special shvua mitra abonon, to the person who sent them, to the mishaleach. And the Gemara is concerned that perhaps in order to avoid that taking that Shavua, we assume that people generally are uninterested in taking Shavuos. So the Gemara at the beginning of Perek Shavuos at the Yanin on Daf Lamites talks about how daunting it is to take a Shavua. Kol Olam is the Azaya, the foundations of the earth shake when one takes a Shavua De'oraisa, and all the things that we do to discourage people from taking Shavuos. So because they are going to try to get out of the Shavua, they are nogea be'edos, and perhaps they should be disqualified from testifying on the Kiddushin. That's the background of the Gemara. So here's what the Ritva says. Source 8. V'iga dekashile, there are those who ask, Kivan dehani edim lo mifsali elo mishum negias edos, deba'ul mafreya lelova ulish dabuilei, because these guys are only disqualified because of negia be'edos, either because they're going to have to pay him back if they fail to carry out their task, or because they're going to have to take a shvua to him to assert that they indeed did properly carry out their task. Lifterinu lova mimamonu shvua, v'sulam nagi be'edos v'leisu v'lesadi. Let the mishaleach just say, you know what? Whatever happens, I'm not going to require you to pay me back. I'm not going to require you to take a shvua. And once he says that, once he says they don't take any shavuos, then they should be able to testify. They no longer have that problem of negia be'edus. And what does the Ritva cite? Unsurprisingly, he cites our Gemara in Bava Basra. Chide aminan b'Bava Basra, gabi b'nei ha'ir she'gnignav sefer Torah shelahem, regarding the residents of a city whose sefer Torah was stolen, ein mevi'en raya me'anshe osa ha'ir. We initially say that you cannot bring any proofs from the people of that city. However, the Gemara there asks, the Gemara there suggests, that two people should be able to relinquish their stake, and then they should be able to testify. So why can't you do the same thing here? Again, why can't you just say, look, I'm mochel zayin on the mamon, I'm mochel on the shvua, I don't need it, I don't want it, and then they should be able to testify.
Is he talking about
this
being
mochel
in advance, when he appoints them a shluchim, or...
Well, no, because he talks about tchilas of b'psol v'sof. So if he would tell them that in advance, I wonder, then maybe that would work for the Ritva.
For edikim purposes, would it have to be done? Maybe it would have to be
edikim. For edikim adavar. We'll get into this... Yeah, exactly. It's going to depend on the classic lamdas about Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar. The Ritva himself, as we know, adopts a more fundamental approach to Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar. We're going to talk about this, Bezer Hashem, probably in 2 weeks. There are some Rishonim, the Mordechai in particular, who calls into question whether or not Negev Eidus should be a problem by Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar at all, which obviously speaks to the nature of Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar. So... I guess right now the Ritva is working within more of a technical approach to Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar, which is just that, you know, you need lo ivur sadi el l'shakri, just a necessary lo ivur sadi el l'shakri. And that therefore relinquishing it, it's a good point, but you'd probably have to be assuming that relinquishing it afterwards would be sufficient as well, at least at this stage. Does that fit with the Ritva's view of Eidus L'Kiyum HaDavar that he suggests... that he proposes on Daf Samachay in Kiddushin? I'm not sure. You have to work that out. But at least for now, that's probably what the assumption that he's working under. So he says, so what is the problem? V'hanachon, this is line 3, what appears correct to me. Te'anan be'inon be'edos t'chiloso v'sofo b'kashros. We need, you can't just tell them, oh, I don't need the shavua afterwards. They need to be kasher from the very beginning. Hilka hasam kol kama de lo sliku nafshaihu harehem kibnei ha'ir uba'alei davar ninhu. So therefore, over there, as long as they did not relinquish their stake, as long as they keep their hand in the game, hand in the till, they are still Baalei Davar below Edim Klal. And again, he's invoking that same principle that we found in the Ravid, that we found in the Rimigash. They are not Edim at all. And again, he quotes the same Gemara in Makos that the Rush was based on. If that were the case, then you'd have, as we noted last week, the people who were involved in any case should disqualify all of the Edim. The Gemara says, which the way it's understood by the Ritva, by the Ravid, is that they are not Edim at all. And that was the same formulation that we found in the Rimigash. When do they become Edim? Only once they do that formal siluk. And once they do that formal siluk, they are then ksherim. So it's a wonderful ba'in ke'achad. The moment that they actually become edim is the actual moment that they become edim ksherim as well. Aval hacha, but here, mekame deliftarinu love, einam ba'alei davar lagabe malve. Before the mishaleach is mochel, before he gets rid of the requirement to take a shavua or to pay, they are not ba'alei davar. They are only nogim be'edusa. They do have some benefit by saying a certain thing happened. They do want to get out of the shvua. But that's a fringe benefit. It's not like they are the actual litigants in the case. Now, note, some treated that case in Bava Basra as nogeya be'edus, right? The Ravid was saying that the case in Bava Basra is nogeya, whereas the Ritva is saying that the case in Bava Basra is actual Ba'alei Davar, which is interesting. That might be a fundamental machlokas. It might be just pertaining to how they understand that case of Sifrei Torah. Did they actually have, if you remember, right, the Gemara was talking about the fact that it's a Sefer Torah, HaKol Itzal Sefer Torah Aniyamim. The question may be, did they actually own the Sefer Torah? Or did they just want to hear it? That would be a technical way of understanding the machlokas. If they actually owned it, maybe they were Ba'alei Davar, if they were just they needed it to hear Kriyas HaTorah, they might be Nogin Be'edusan. But what's clear from the Ritva himself is that he holds a very clear distinction. There are Ba'alei Davar, and those people are Einam Edim Klal. Those people are outside of the category of Edus, and that is what we are dealing with in Bava Basra. Then there is a separate category called people who are Nogin Be'edusan, who derive some benefit from their testimony, and those people are not Ba'alei Davar, they are Edim Psulim, and the standard of Tchilasa Bepsol V'sofa B'kashros would apply. Okay, so that's the chiluk between Ba'al Davar and Nogaya. Now, one thing I want to note about the Ritva before we see the third approach that the Rashba offers to answer this question is that what other side point clearly emerges from this Ritva that's critical for us?
Fourth answer to the Rashba's question, which is that the premise is wrong. 100%.
I wouldn't say it's an answer to the Rashba's question, right?
Yeah.
Right? It's the whole question, 100%. What emerges from this Ritva is that Tchilaso v'psol v'sof v'kashrus is a problem by Nogeya Be'edus. He says it's not a problem if you are a Ba'al Davar. If you are Nogeya Be'edus, it is going to be a problem. In other words, the whole question of the Rashba was, why does Siluk work in the case of Bava Basra if they are Nogin Be'edusam? Right? The Ritva, if you have a problem with Tchilaso B'Psol V'Sof B'Kashos, the Ritva would say, in that case, there's no Tchilaso B'Psol V'Sof B'Kashos because they are Ba'alei Davar. That's how he would explain the Gemara in Bava Basra. In that sense, it is an answer to the Rashba's question, if you're viewing it as a local textual question. But in terms of the broader issue, whether or not Tchilaso B'Psol V'Sof B'Kashos applies to Nogeya Be'edus, the Ritva would assert that it does apply. And indeed, we find a different iteration of this in Tosfos. If you look at source 4, you have Tosfos in Nidu Daf Nun Amun Aleph. And it's subtle, so you have to, it's not direct, but if you read it, it is still clear. V'im Tomar, Tosfos asks in source 4, this is Tosfos Nidu Daf Nun Amun Aleph, the Aramas will call it Kosher. The principle that the Gemara Nidu is dealing with is called Kosher Le'edus Kosher Le'dayanus, that if you're Kosher to testify, then you're certainly kosher to be a judge, not the other way around. Being kosher le'edos is necessary to be kosher le'dayonos, but it is not sufficient to be kosher le'dayonos. Source 4, v'yim tor b'perachas kasabatim, t'parach li salku be'trem minayu v'le'daynu. In our Gemara in Bava Basra, we say that two people can perform siluk and then testify. Ha'b'perach yesh noklan she'e v'esi, posel tchilasa b'psol v'sofa b'kashros. However, again, the same kasha that all the Rishonim are raising. Why isn't there a problem with tchilas v'psofsof b'kashas? It's also say as follows. B'chi tema ladun kasher tfei. These are the critical. These five words are critical. And if you want to tell me that judging is better, what are Tosos implicitly suggesting in that line? Again, it's subtle, but it's clear. They are suggesting that perhaps, what are they kosher, when they do that siluk, what are they able now to do? Specifically serve as judges, but they would not be able to serve as witnesses. That's Tosos' suggested answer here. You're telling me there's a problem with Tchilasu B'Psovasov B'Kashros. Maybe that is only a problem for Eidos, but not a problem for Dayanus. Okay? So the way Tosos are understanding that Gemara is perhaps, at this stage, is perhaps they would only be kosher to judge, not to testify. But then Tosos asks, V'hatanan kola kosher ladun kosher lahayid. But didn't we say, I'm sorry, maybe I got, did I get it backwards? Kola kosher ladun kosher lahayid. Don't we say that anybody who is kosher to serve as a judge is also kosher to serve as a witness? Did I get that backwards? I thought it was the other way around. I'll have to look back at the Gemara neither. But in any event, for Tosafot's purposes here, they're saying, how can you have that distinction between a judge and a witness? V'yesh lomar, demasnisen mairi b'lahaba. Kol ha-kosher ladun lehaba, kosher... Oh no, I'm sorry. No, that's correct. That's just the contrapositive of what I was saying before. Kala kasher ladun, kasher lahayin. Right? If you are kasher ladun, that is not necessary, but is sufficient to be kasher for as a witness. Right? It's the opposite. It's the flip side of what I was saying before. That you don't need to be a kasher dayan in order to be a kasher aid, but if you are a kasher dayan, you are certainly a kosher aid by virtue of the fact that it is necessary to be a kosher aid in order to be a kosher dayan. Again, ignoring the fancy footwork in terms of the logic, it's the same point. And Tosas are saying, when is it true that any person who's... So Tosas kasha is, if anybody who's kosher to serve as a judge is kosher to serve as a witness, then how can you tell me that tchilaso b'psol v'sofa b'kashros is fine for a judge, but is not fine for a witness? This person would be able to judge, but would not be able to give testimony, and according to the principle of the Gemara of the Mishnah Nida, as long as you should be able to judge, you should be able to give testimony as well. It's not dealing with some kind of retroactive assessment of what was going on before. It's giving you a principle for going forward. Anybody who is kosher, if they see something now, if they are kosher to judge on that case, they're going to be kosher to serve as witnesses as well. But it's not referring to this case of tchilaso b'psol. It's not going back on tchilaso b'psol. Now what emerges from Tosvos is that in our Gemara, the siluk only works to serve as a dayan, not to serve as a witness. And Tosvos are assuming that this whole problem of tchilaso b'psol v'sofa b'kashras only applies to eidos, which makes sense, and the Torah, after all, does come up within the context of eidos. So, And Tosas do have a good deal from the Gemara, right? It's, what was the language of the Gemara? Li salgu beitre minayhu, vili dainu. They should serve as judges. Now, the broader context of the Gemara was Eidos, which is why I think it's certainly fair and perhaps even more compelling to read it as referring to testimony as well. But that one word, li salgu beitre minayhu, vili dainu, does indeed imply that it's referring specifically to judging. So on that point, Tosas do have a strong argument to make. That perhaps it's specifically on the judgment, but when it comes to the testimony itself, tchilaso b'psol v'sofa b'kashros would apply. Now, what are the ramifications of that? Again, it goes back to our analysis beforehand. Let's just assess it from the perspective of the Ravid, right? They could theoretically agree with what everybody said so far about the nature of nogeya be'edus, but what would they disagree about? It's true, I agree Nogeya Be'edos is just a chashash sheker. Or alternatively, I agree that Nogeya Be'edos is a psol ba'al davar. But we Tosfos hold that Tchilaso B'psol B'sofa B'kashros is still a significant obstacle and problem, even if it's just a chashash sheker, even if it's just a ba'al davar. So option number one is that it's a machlokas about the scope of Tchilaso B'psol B'sofa B'kashros. The alternative option, which is far more interesting for us, is that perhaps this is a new view of Nogeh Be'idus. Now, what view would that be? So, it would obviously have to be a formal psul. And the most common description of that formal psul is often attributed to the Ir Shushan, according to the Shach, but hundreds of years before the Ir Shushan was already said by the Yad Ramah, is the principle of Adam Karov Eitzel Atzma. That perhaps this is a subcategory, or an instance, of the psul kurva. We know that you're not allowed to testify for your relatives. That's something that we'll see later in our parak, hopefully. Not allowed to testify for relatives. And one type of relative, ein lecha karov gadol, me adam atzma, a person himself is related to himself. And that is the form of psul that we're dealing with here. Now, to note, the language of Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo is not a chiddush of the Rishonim. It's simply the application to Nogeya that is the chiddush. Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo, I think, appears in that Gemara Sanhedrin on Daf Yud. Does it appear in Sanhedrin Daf Yud? Did you do the first parak? What are you saying? No. So, you guys can get up to that?
Yeah, just
so I think it appears in that Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Yud. I should look back at it. But the application here is a chiddush of the Yad Ramah, which was adopted and made famous by the Ir Shushan, Adam Karov Eitzel Atzma. So that leaves three approaches to the psul nogeya. And we're going to see the Ramban in a moment, because I think the Ramban is important. The Ramban is actually a little difficult to understand. But three approaches. Chasha Sheker, Baal Davar, and Adam Karov Eitzel Atzma. Now, we noted at the outset that there's no source for the psalm Nogeya Be'idus. So you'll notice that these do one of the two things that we pointed out at the outset. Either it's a swara, a chashah sheker, right? Chacham ina barosho, as I said, people used to, I think I quoted this 2 weeks ago, people used to ask the Rav sometimes what his source for something was. What's the mar makom, what's the makor for that? He says, the makor is a clear and logical mind. Now, that's, if you suspect that the guy is lying, then you don't accept what he has to say in court. It's a basic swara. Or alternatively, if there's no source, it has to fit into another category of the formal psulim of Basin, the formal psulim la'idos. So, according to the Rimi Gash, it fits into the category of Baal Davar, which we know from a pasuk, Makos Davar, B'Makame Davar, Akosim Medaber. That's Baal Davar. According to the Yad Ramah, it fits into Kurva, fits into the psul of Karov. So either it's going to be a svara, or it's going to fit into another category. Now, just to round out the picture of tefillah of prakashas before we move on to our next issue, well, let's just see the Ramban in order to complete this. And the Ramban's answer is a little difficult to understand. But, I mean, his language is probably the most parallel to the language that we initially saw in Tosos in Source 3. So now we're in Source 5, number 3 within Source 5. Our Ramban's alterates, why is it not tefillah of prakashas? Shalone emar tchilasu bepaslos, ela b'misha haya karov v'nisrachik, o psul haguf, acher. It's only when we had that whole principle of tchilasu bepaslos that poses a problem. That's only by someone who was a karov, and for whatever circumstance is no longer a karov, or for somebody who had a formal psul haguf, some kind of formal personal disqualification, that's no longer there. Shareza meyed l'mish haya krovo b'sh'as re'iyah. Because you are testifying for someone who was your relative at the point of Re'iyah, at the point that you saw this episode that you were testifying on. But in this case, now that you have separated yourself from the money, from you've severed your monetary connection to the case, you're not testifying for your relative, and he's not testifying for somebody who was his relative at the point that he saw. Because it is another person's money and is not his, and he's testifying for others. What does that mean? I'm asking because I'm not 100% sure myself. It's not really so clear. When you're testifying for a karov, you're testifying for somebody who was at one point your karov. Here, it's mamon acherim hilo, it's other people's money. Now, it was your money, you could have equally said the same thing, right? Structurally, you could have said, okay, you're testifying on money that was yours at the point of the re'iyah.
Money doesn't have, isn't viewed by Halacha as having a
Yeah, so that's I think it's similar to what I was suggesting last week in the name of Tosfos, that there's kind of like what I would call, I think, I don't know if this is my language or Rosenzweig's language, I don't know. If you like it, I'll give it to him. If not, I take responsibility. There's a lingering after effect that of the psal. That when you were a karov with somebody and that relationship is severed, and you said maybe Russia should be a little bit different, but certainly when it comes to karov, it's not as if the relationship has been entirely obliterated. When it comes to karov, what's the best raya for that? The best raya for that is what? Perhaps isurei erva. Many of the isurei erva still apply even after you are no longer strictly a karov. So clearly there's some kind of lingering halachic relationship that exists between the two people. When it comes to mamon, it's not something pertaining to my personal status or my personal identity. It's a circumstance which happens to give me some kind of interest in the case. But it's nothing that's core or fundamental to my identity as a person. And as a function of that, I think the Ramban is saying that once you shed that, and that's it. It's something that's left behind. When it's something that is critical to your personal status in halacha, when it's something that pertains to your very identity, your personal identity, that is not something that can simply be shed easily and you just move on and pretend it never happened. Yeah.
It sounds to me like he's saying that what's different is the subject of the eidot. Here you're being, the subject of the eidot is the money. Who owns the money? Where's the money going? Money is money. It's, if you own it, if it's your money or could have been your money, then you can't be made. But if it's not your money, then just because it once was your money, I mean, if I give you $5, well, I can no longer be made on any transaction that you make with anyone else. No,
right,
because it's not my money.
But then would you? But then you'd,
if
you'd say that
about a person, and I have a relationship with that person, or if I had a relationship with that person, it doesn't matter because
here's the problem with what you're saying. If we would take what you're saying ad absurdum, right? Then you would assert that, let's say I'm testifying on a former karov, v'dinei mamonos. Chosh and Mishpat, you'd say there's no problem with tchilas v'psofsof
m'kashos? It sounds like he's saying that...
You understand, Jerry?
No.
Like the same logic would apply according to what you're saying. There you're testifying about money. You're not testifying about a person.
Right. I mean, it almost sounds like he is saying that, although it doesn't...
No, his language is not that he's not testifying on the money. He says, la'acherim hu me'ed. It is for others that he is testifying. Again, my biggest problem with that svara is that again, if the logic would, if you'd be consistent with the logic, you would end up saying that tchilas b'sofsof b'kashos should not be a problem by dinei momonos, even for a karov. Not Lomatzinu. I don't remember the exact case that's brought up in the Gemara Daf Kuf Avches. We have to look it up. But I don't think that's the case. Pretty sure it's not. Let's just finish up. Let's just finish up the quote of the Ramban. Kolo shel davar einal demeid l'oso shehaya pasul lo b'sha'as r'iya. The general principle is if you were puzzle for that person at the point of re'iyah, you cannot testify. Aval puzzle lezeh b'shas re'iyah meyid b'oso edos la'acherim sharei t'chiloso kasher hu etzlam. It's even more nuanced here. What he's saying here. Let's figure this out together. Again, it seems to be highlighting the connection to the money. I think you're right, but I wouldn't formulate it the way that you're taking it, for the reason that I said before. It's you are puzzled to the money almost, but now the money is money shel acherim. And etzlam, it is tchilaso kasher. It's almost getting into a Rimigash-esque formulation, right? That once it is theirs, that is a new tchila, and that tchila is bekashus.
It's not a new tequila in terms of time. I mean, it's not like when you're nostalgic, you have a tequila. I mean, Rimadash was talking, sounded like when you're at the time you're nostalgic, you have a new tequila. he sounds like he's saying
that at the initial point,
to, right,
you were kosher for them.
Going back to the Eidos, relative to the new
realities,
parties, right, the new circumstances,
right,
or the new
you were kosher b'shas r'iya for them.
Right.
You were just puzzle for yourself, and for yourself, you got rid of it. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. But it's going to be something nuanced like that. I do think, well, let's just, again, finish. So he does say that if you had a karov, who had a case, and the karov was mistalik from the money, then you can testify. Again, what he seems to be saying is that you can't shed a familial relationship, but a monetary relationship can be shed, and it's all about, you know, the whose possession the money is in. And again, the way I understand the Ramban is that things that are integral to one's personal identity can't just be shed lightly. When it comes to mammon, that's not something that we view as fundamental to you. It's a situation that you happen to be in. It's almost situational. And therefore, you can shed it without a problem. Now, what doesn't emerge from the Ramban is that, for the Ramban, when Nogeya Be'edos does exist, you can take any of the three approaches to Nogeya Be'edos, right? You can claim that it is a psol adam karov etzal atzmo, but once you've shed that, the Ramban says that you can, again, you can move on from that. So the Ramban does give us the ability, before we were saying, according to Tosus and the Ritva, because Nogeya Be'edos is a formal psol, tchilaso b'psol v'sofo b'kashros will be a problem by Nogeya Be'edos as well. That's what Tosus and Nida said, that's what the Ritva and Kiddushin said. If you adopt this approach of the Ramban, it frees you up to say, yes, Nogeya Be'edos is a formal psol, like something akin to Adam Karav Eitzel Atzmo, but you can still get out of the problem of Tchilas Psof Sofa Bekashrus if you invoke a Ramban-like Svar. Fine. That is the whole central question of Tchilas Psof Sofa Bekashrus. Now what we take from that, and let's just take a broad step out before we get into another particular option. So like I said before, what we take from all that is three conceptual approaches to Nogeya Be'edos. One, it's not a formal psol at all. It is a chashashek. It's purely a concern about the person's reliability. Second is that it's a formal psol. Or let's just go in the order that we saw them. Second option is that it's not a formal psol, it's a formal disqualification because you are a Baal Dover who's outside of the category of Eidos. Option number three, it is something like Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo, it's a formal disqualification in that regard. Now these three approaches will lead to many, many nafkamina. And I want to explore them, you know, for the remainder of tonight and hopefully next week and probably going a little bit into the following week as well, because some of the ramifications of this are extremely important. It's not just another iteration of the same topic. Broadly speaking, there will be two kinds of nafkaminas. One, I'm going to go in backwards order. One nafkamina is who is considered nogeya be'edos and who is not. We're going to talk about all sorts of different cases where we consider whether or not a person is actually going to be disqualified because of Nogeya Be'edos. Now, for those types of nafkamina, the most straightforward approach is which one? For determining who is Nogeya?
Straightforward in what sense?
Which one is going to give us the easiest way, the easiest litmus test to determine whether or not a person should be considered Nogeya? Right? It's a very easy qualification. If we suspect you, then you're out. If we don't suspect you, then you're not. So when the Rishonim debate whether testifying against oneself is an Ogeya Be'edos, I think most of us would say, unless you have like a masochistic streak, right? If you're testifying against yourself, there would not be a Chashah Sheker, right? If it's a formal psul, then we could begin talking about whether or not there would be an Ogeya Be'edos. If it's a Chashah Sheker, then you probably would not say that there has to be a certain minimum amount of monetary stake in the case in order to be Nogeya. If there's anything that's, you know, so again, unless you invoke the technical svara that we don't assume people would lie for less than a certain amount, but I think it would be more logical to say that you'd have to assess it on a case-by-case basis and whether or not the person's going to lie. If you say there's like a formal monetary, you know, requisite amount in order to access Nogeya Be'edos, in order to qualify for Nogeya Be'edos, that will imply that it's more than just a chashash sheker. So in that case, chashash sheker will be likely is in one category, and the other two, given their more formal stature, will be in a second category. That's type of nafkamina number one, scope of Nogeya Be'edos. Issue number two is once somebody is nogea be'edos, okay, now we know the person qualifies, what are the ramifications of that? What different types of psulim will apply? And that is essentially exactly what we've been talking about until now. If a person is nogea be'edos, will tchiloso be'psul v'sofo be'kashros apply? For those types of nafkamina, in most circumstances, chasha shekar and ba'al davar will stand together in one category, and adam karov etz al atzma will stand in the second category. Insofar as the first two are not an aid puzzle, whereas adam karov etz al atzma is an aid puzzle. So you have different groupings. And the first one, chasha, in the first types of nafkamina, will find that chasha shekar often stands as on one side, and the other two stand on the other side. And the second type of nafkamina will find that the one that tends to stand out is adam karov etz al atzma, whereas the other two will mostly stick together. And that's why it's very important to note that there are three categories here. Again, a lot of times people overlook the fact, they'll just say a formal psul or a non-formal psul. That doesn't really do justice to what the Rishonim are discussing. Again, the Rishonim here are quite explicit about what they're talking about. There are definitely at least three approaches in this sugya. So like I said, before we were talking about an instance of the second nafkamina, somebody is nogea be'edos, what are the ramifications of that? Does tchilaso b'psul v'sofo b'kashros apply, or does it not? And again, as we noted, the general streak was, the Rimigash and the Ravid, who said it's a achshah sheker, or baal davar, they said tchilaso b'psul v'sofo b'kashros won't be a problem. Tosos and the Ritva, who adopted a more formal psul, or seemed to adopt a more formal psul, felt that tchilaso b'psul was a problem. Okay? I want to introduce the first category of nafkamina. Who is considered nogea? What is the scope of nogea be'edos? And one of the central locations here is, again, another Gemara in Perikas Kazapatim. And this is a Gemara in Baba Basra and Daf Memhe. Now, the context is Shibud and Achrayus, which is always a complicated topic, especially when I had to define it to Baba Basra. The notion of Shibud is very difficult to describe. But let's just deal with the most basic case. I own a piece of land worth $100. But I'm out of cash, so I borrow $100 from Reuven. And we stipulate that if I fail to pay him by a certain point in liquid assets, he will be able to collect his debt from the field that I own. Fine, I borrow $100 from Reuven, I blow it all in Atlantic City, and now I need another $100. To pay back Reuven, or for whatever I need $100 for. So now I sell that field to Shimon. So now I'm again holding $100 in my hand. But again, I blew it. I engaged in some business venture that failed. Again, I don't have $100. I don't have a penny to my name. Now, I owed that money to Reuven, and we established that if I failed to pay him, the field would be collateral. So even though I sold the field to Shimon, Reuven is now able to collect that field from Shimon as payment for the debt that I owe him. Even though Shimon paid $100 of his own money for that field. That's the concept of shibud. Now, the only other piece of background information is that there are two types of sales. There are sales be'achrayus and shelo be'achrayus. A sale be'achrayus means that I stipulate to Shimon, look, I'm selling you the field, Reuven might collect it from you, but if he does, I'll pay you back. That's a sale be'achrayus. Shelo be'achrayus means, if Reuven collects it, that's it, I'm done, you're taking a gamble on this. And if Reuven collects the field, it's your loss. The Gemara in Bava Basra describes a case where there's a sale shelo be'achrayus. So again, same case. I owe Reuven money, I sell my field to Shimon shelo be'achrayus. Now Levi comes, a third party comes, a new party comes, and claims the field from Shimon. Says the field never really belongs to you, it never really belonged to Schreier in the first place. I want the field. And I want to testify that it does belong to Shimon. The Gemara says there's a potential problem of nogea be'edos. Why would there be a problem of nogea be'edos? What interest do I have in Shimon keeping the field? My interest in Shimon keeping the field is that I still owe that debt to Reuven, and I want that debt to be canceled out. And if Shimon owns the field, what can Reuven do? He can collect that debt from Shimon, right? Which puts me off the hook. So I have a vested interest in making sure that Shimon keeps the field. That's the context of this Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Mem. Kufa. Amar Rav Bar Shmuel Mishmei de Shmuel. Rav Bar Shmuel said in the name of Shmuel, Hamocher sado lachaveru shelo be'achrayus. Again, the exact case that we described. You sell it, and you have no guarantee that you're going to pay the person back if the field is collected from him. Ein meid lo aleha, mebnesha ma'amida b'pnei bal chovo. You can't testify that the field indeed belongs to Shimon, because again, I want Shimon to keep the field, so that when my creditor, is that the right term? Debtor, creditor? I'm the debtor, he's the creditor, right? Malva is a creditor, right? It's a question about English language. So when the Malva comes, we'll just use Malva and Lova, okay? It's because I want, I still owe that debt to the Malva, and I want him to be able to collect it from that field that I sold to Shimon. Mishim Amida b'nei Balchova. Now the Gemara asks a question. Heichi dami, what is the case over here? Idi islay ara achrisi. Let's say I owned another field. Aleidi dehadar. The rule is that Reuven's not going to go to Shimon, the field that I sold to Shimon, if I have a field that I still own myself. That has to go first. So I don't gain anything by Shimon having the field, because he's going to come take from my field. Idi leslay ara achrisi. And if he doesn't have any other fields, my nafkale mina. Well, what does he care? He has nothing to lose at all. So Reuven, it's not like Reuven's going to come after him anyway. If he owns another field, Reuven's going to come after him anyway. If he doesn't own anything, then Reuven has nothing to come after. So what does he gain by Shimon having the field? La'olam deleis le'ara achrisi. Gemara answers, really, he doesn't have any other field. To amar lo nira de'lehevei lo v'rasha v'lo yishalim. But he doesn't want to be known as the guy who is, as the Mizmor Tehillim says, lo v'rasha v'lo yishalim. He's somebody who borrows, doesn't pay back. He has the status of Russia. He doesn't want to be a Russian. So why is he Nogaya? He doesn't want to be considered Russia. Good. And Tosfos, as we'll see, maybe the reason why he's Nogaya is because he's thinking about the future. He plans on making money for himself at some point. He doesn't want Reuven to take it from him. That's a question that Tosfos raised all the time. We'll talk about that in the future. Rimi Gash raises a more basic question. Source 10. Lo nigolei delehevei lo v'rasha v'lo yishalim. He's interested because he doesn't want to be a Russian. He doesn't want to be considered lover Rashi Leishalim. Yesh kan lishal. There's a clear question here. Hei reishinon lebe edos sheker, ki hei delo lehevei lover Rashi Leishalim. V'ha Rasha de'ed sheker, tfei chamir v'olim me Rasha delover Rashi Leishalim. He says, why is this guy lying? He's lying in court. He's violating one of the Aseres Hadibros in order so that he shouldn't be a lover Rasha Leishalim. That's his motivation? Giving false testimony in court, the Rimi Gash says, I can definitively tell you, it was a lot worse than this lover rush of Leishalim. Lo od, el deha ashkachan dekayin rachmanel eid sheker Russia. If you want to tell me he's avoiding this status of Russia, an eid sheker is also called a Russia. Desiv et stiku es hatzadik v'hershiu es ha-Russia, ta'ukimna be'edim zomim min ha-kosim medaber. Da'amar ulo minayin le'edim zomim min ha-tor, desiv et stiku es hatzadik. We have a pasuk that refers to edim who are mishakrim as Rishayim. So A, it's a much worse Avera. B, you want to tell me he wants to avoid the label of Russia? The label of Russia certainly equally, if not more, applies to somebody who lies in Pastin. But given the Kayar Rahman al-Echeka Russia, since the Torah calls him a Russia, how in the world can you tell me that he's offering false testimony in order to avoid Lova Russia of Loisha? So the Rimi Gash offers three answers. Anyone want to take a crack at what the answers may be? Jerry, you got any thoughts?
Yeah,
what's the psychological reason?
People are more willing to lie to feel better about not being bad people than they are.
Interesting. So you're giving like a down the cuffs. The Rimi Gash gives a different psychological reason that's like a little more cynical almost. Let's take a look at the Rimi Gash says.
I think that's true though. Like I think people have less compunction about lying
than they do about other ethical areas.
Try to justify your own...
I'm not a bad person.
I'm not a bad person. I would never be a bad person.
Interesting. Rimi Gash offers three answers. Number one, Vim Tomar. He starts with Vim Tomar, which is a good question because he's going to reject this first answer. Tehalo mekablinan sahaduse la mishum dechayshi le te mechavein la asude edo sheker. Our first concern is perhaps it's not that we're concerned that he's actually going to testify falsely. This is actually something that you yourself suggested before, Jerry. Ela mishum dechayshinan dilma minta daite besahaduse. Perhaps it tinged the way he sees things. Look, if he were thinking rationally, would he actually overtly lie about this? No. But because he has what to gain by lova rasha v'lo yishalem, maybe he's not going to lie. It's going to color the way he sees it. And because it's going to color the way he sees it, he's not going to have any issues, any qualms with lying, because he doesn't see it that way. Rimi Gash says, Haleka lememar, he doesn't like this answer. Haleka lememar hachi. When are we concerned for, not for overt sheker, for overt falsehood, but that it might color your view of the case? We're concerned about that by judges. Because there it's contingent on one's logical reasoning. Because there, when he's considering the case, again, he might have some kind of, what do they call it now? They call it, the kind of bias that you can't recognize. What is it?
Implicit bias.
Don't you guys have like a whole class on that in med school?
Implicit.
Yeah, implicit bias, right? Okay. So, it's in the Rimi Gash. The Rimi Gash is into it also.
Probably
not the same way.
But only for Dayan.
But only for Dayan. What's it? Is it dot right? So, I mean, what is it? Okay. So, it's implicit bias of a gabe sada, kibin du davar. He says, if you're just witnessing something, there's no minta daite there, there's no thinking about it, there are no logical processes going on, so there you're just seeing it, so there's no problem. No,
interesting, because that's like a very pre-modern conception of Eidos. Like, no one, if you watch a TV courtroom drama, no one thinks that, like, each witness is really, like, telling objective truth. That, like,
100%.
On its own.
100%. I agree 100%. I mean, I think one could have said, again, the example that I like to give is the sliding into third base example, right? Where everyone on the fielding team immediately yells out, and everybody on the batting team immediately yells safe. It's not because anybody's lying. Again, your view of the situation is colored by what you're witnessing.
He acknowledges that that is a thing, but not Adim don't do that. Like that.
Right, again, so in my case, the sliding into third base is Adim, right? Everybody saw the same thing.
Right.
I mean, and there have been many psychological studies on how witnesses are actually one of the worst ways of proving something. I mean, like, again, Chazal, I mean, perhaps the fact that there are two witnesses speaks to this, right? That gets into the whole question of Alpishnaim Edim Yakum Davar, is that Exeris HaKosov, or is that Bididami, the Ktsos, and the Nesivos, Big Machlokas. But, like, Elizabeth Loftus is this one of these major, like, professors of psychology. I don't know if any of you are familiar with her work. She just does a lot on how, like, memory is not nearly as black and white and objective as we think it is. And people who are not lying, they pass any lie detector test, will say that they saw things that they didn't actually see because they think they did. She did, like, fascinating studies where, like, she superimposed a picture of, like, Buzz Bunny into a picture of Disney World. Then she'd ask people about trips they took to Disney World as kids, and they'd talk about seeing, like, how great it was seeing Bugs Bunny when they were in Disney. Bugs Bunny is a Looney Tunes character. He does not belong in Disney. He's not owned by the Walt Disney Company, right? So, again, they weren't lying. They were just these things manipulate the way we remember things. So it's very interesting the Rimi Gash is articulating this at all. You know, I think it's fascinating. I don't know what the state of contemporary psychology was in the times of the Rimi Gash, but he is already articulating kind of mid to but he doesn't like that svara. That's one option that he says. Option number two. V'yesh l'hashav b'she'el azul. Let's go through this quickly. T'hada amrinan v'lo nichalei d'lehevi lo v'rasha v'lo yishalem. That which we said that he doesn't want to be a rasha v'lo yishalem. Lo lotzeh z'idei shamayim hu. It's not that he's such a tzaddik that he doesn't want to be a lo v'rasha v'lo yishalem. Lo lotzeh z'idei shamayim hu d'lo nichalei b'hachi. Because if it was acting l'shem l'shamayim, keep the less midi, might yisle l'mevad, have a leonus, panush chwan apatre. If it's about, you know, this status in shamayim, look, in the end of the day, he has nothing, he's doing his best, he's on us, what is he going to do about it? He doesn't want to be perceived as the guy who borrows money and doesn't pay it back. People are going to call him a rasha because he's borrowing other people's money and he's not returning it. He's perhaps going to testify falsely. They're not going to know that he's lying. So he doesn't care what's going to happen in the Masifta Derakia. He's not so frum. He just wants to maintain his image in society. People aren't going to know about that. So I was telling you, it's a little bit more of a cynical psychological approach.
Very,
right? The guy, I mean, it is, yeah, it's quite reasonable, right? And we see it all the time in our society, right? People are concerned about their spiritual image as far as others are concerned, but not necessarily its unfortunate reality, as far as it's concerned, L'shem Shamayim. So that's the second answer of the Rimigash. But then the Rimigash offers a third answer, as intriguing as the first two are. The third one is the one that's by far the most important conceptually. Number three. Inami Yesh Lahashiv. The Rimigash offers a third answer. Tilha Delo Mekablinon Sahaduse. That which we don't accept as Eidos. La Mishun Dechayshinon De'Eidos Shekahu. It's not because we have a chashash that he's going to lie. This is the Rimigash L'shita So, right? The Rimigash holds that Nogei Be'Eidos is not about chashash Sheker. Because it's still good for him that he shouldn't be considered lover rush of lo yishalim. There is some benefit that he derives from his testimony. Now, in terms of the net benefit, is it worth it over the problem of lying? No. If we do like a net benefit analysis, the benefit he receives from lying, the detriment of lying, outweighs the benefit he receives from testifying about, so that he should avoid lover rush of lo yishalim. But that's only if we're weighing two things against one another, if we're considering net benefit. Is there some benefit to him, in a vacuum, from being considered somebody who's not a lover rush of lo yishalim? There most certainly is, the Rimigash says. And that in and of itself is sufficient to justify nogea be'edus. So again, tekiven the lo nichal and have a lova rasha below yishalim. Second line, to ashtachet the kamati lehanam isaduse. He still derives some benefit from his testimony. Have a le command de masid lenafshe. Again, look at the language here. It's somebody who's testifying for himself. Again, Rimigash is falling back on that baldavar idea. To lo makablin on mine. We don't accept anything from him. But lo mishum dechayshin on lebahusa adusa. Elo mishum de lo mikri aid klal. Not because we have some concern that he's lying, but again, because he doesn't fit within the category of a witness. Now again, this is just a great example. It's the first, and again, hopefully we'll see others, because each case is worthy of assessment in and of itself. But this is a great example of this nafkamina of who is considered a nogea be'edus. What is the scope of nogea be'edus? If it's all about chashash sheker, then obviously there has to be a chashash sheker. It's a very clear, straightforward standard, right? If there's no concern that the person is going to lie, then if you say that it's all about chashash sheker, then you can't say that he's pasul. If it's about baal davar or about adam karav etzel atzmo, then we have a lot more flexibility, and the Rimigash invokes that flexibility here. He says, look, it's true, we are not concerned that he is going to lie. It's true that the detriment of lying in court outweighs the benefit he receives from the lover rush of lo yishalim issue. But because there's still some benefit that he derives from lover rush of lo yishalim, that is sufficient to turn him into a nogea be'edus. Now, just to point out, did you have to say that? No. You certainly can argue that you are only going to be a ba'al davar if there is a chashash sheker. In other words, you could say the requisite standard for becoming a ba'al davar is having enough vested interest in the case that we have a concern that you would lie. And that is actually a very logical standard. It's not an illogical standard. If you are so invested that there's a concern that you'll potentially lie, in other words, we could have said that you have to have a positive net benefit in order to be considered a baal davar.
In that case, you could in theory have a case over such a small amount of money that there are no baal davar. If it's such a small amount of money, we don't think anyone would lie about it or something like that.
I don't think anybody would go as far as to say that Reuven and Shimon themselves are not Baal Davar.
This is only qualifications to become an ancillary Baal Davar.
Yeah, 100%. But we will see a machlokas in the Achronim. Let's say you derive some benefit. They don't give like a sheer of money, but let's say you derive some benefit that is non-monetary benefit. That's machlokas Achronim. How they deal with this Lover Rush of Lo Yishalim case, those who hold that you need money will assert that Lover Rush of Lo Yishalim has monetary ramifications because nobody's going to lend you money. I mean, it's a stretch, but that's what they will they say to address this case, right? But the important thing is that over here, you have a very clear standard when it comes to chashash sheker. When it comes to chashash sheker, you need a chashash sheker. If you adopt the other approaches, and on the flip side, if you don't, in other words, you need a chashash sheker in order to be nogea be'edus, and the flip side of that is, if there is no chashash sheker, you certainly will not be nogea be'edus. If you adopt the other approaches, then there's a lot more flexibility. You can say that you need a chashash sheker, but you don't necessarily need one. And indeed, we have the Rimigash in one answer suggesting that you don't need one. It's just important to note that because we will find people talking in the category of Shasheka regarding the scope of Nogea Be'edos, but will still treat Nogea Be'edos as a formal psul in terms of its ramifications. So I think what you have to say there is it is a formal psul, but in order to reach that standard, to qualify for the formal psul, you need a chashashek, okay? So in the coming weeks, we'll explore these two categories of nafkaminos. We'll discuss, first we're going to go back to the question of the scope of who qualifies as nogeya. That will get us back to our Gemara in Sanhedrin. And then we will discuss the issue of, once somebody is nogeya, what are the ramifications of that?